Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And today we have a very special guest, Annabelle Diaz. You are a certified financial planner, newly minted. You also hold a BA in economics from UC Santa Cruz and a master of science in financial planning from Golden Gate University. I'm going to ask you about that in just a second. You joined the Natural Bridges financial team in 2017, where you serve clients in a fiduciary fee-only capacity. You're a member of the Alliance of Comprehensive Financial Planners, or Comprehensive Planners, a community of tax-focused financial planners operating under the retainer model. And before joining Natural Bridges, you served as a program manager for a local nonprofit that helps children with cancer and life-threatening illnesses. You continue to give back to your community by volunteering with United Way's VITA program, preparing tax returns, and Eden Housing as a financial coach. In your spare time, you enjoy reading, gardening, and horse riding. You got a full life. Welcome to the podcast, Annabelle.
No, thank you for having me.
So thank you for answering the call. I put out a call. We were just chopping it up in the digital green room before this, and put out a call on LinkedIn and said, hey, anybody that's recently passed the CFP exam, please share your story, because I think day in the life of a CFP exam taker is something that the Jumpstart community would love to know about. And I'm really grateful that you're spending some of your heart, your valuable time to kind of walk us through this process that you went through.
Well, of course, I would love to share my experience, so hopefully I can help others along their journey.
Yeah, cool. So let's break this up into, I think, let's first kind of talk about what I would say to CFP or not to CFP, because I think, you know, a lot of aspiring financial professionals hear about that gold standard. And there's a lot of studies out there, but I think the last I read was something like 350,000, 380,000 people calling themselves financial advisors, but there's just shy of 90,000 CFP. So, you know, this might not be for everybody. So maybe talk about what was the decision that caused Annabelle to say, yeah, I think I want to do CFP.
Yeah, so one of the things that geared me towards steering towards the CFP was that it's one of the more prominent certifications in the industry. Another item that I was looking at was that the CFP takes a holistic approach to financial planning. So they don't just want you to know about investments or retirement planning. The CFP board wants you to know a little bit about estate planning, insurance, tax planning. And I really love that approach because I thought it would better serve clients and allow me to stand out from the rest of the crowd. And that was another reason why I steered towards the CFP certification versus other certifications that just focused on, for example, investments.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I often talk to aspiring financial professionals that, you know, in this, let's call it family of comprehensive financial planning, you have obviously the certified financial planner designation, then you have the chartered financial consultant that the American College offers. And then IMCA, well, it used to be called IMCA, but they offer the CPWA. And I tell people they're all kind of in the same family, depending on what type you want. But yes, this I would say bar none, this is probably the most recognized, most publicized. With that being said, do you get a lot of clients that ask you about credentials? Because this is something that comes across the conversations with aspiring financial professionals or career changers all the time, which is, you know, clients see this and clients are going to notice it. Do you get a lot of dialogue around the designation that you have?
Yeah, I do get it every now and then. If I'm leading a meeting, a client might say, are you also a CFP? And I have to say, yeah, I am. And that right away builds up more trust and confidence, especially if you're a younger planner or a career changer, you're already a little nervous going in. So having that CFP to back you up is just really great. But I get that more frequently from prospects that are calling in. The first thing that they're looking for is someone that has the CFP designation. So I get that a little bit more from prospects.
Yeah. And what I guess just overall, though, as a professional in this industry, how do you, and you may allude to this a little bit before, so like what level of confidence, I think, do you feel that you have a different level of confidence? Do you feel that you know, the stuff that you learned in the CFP program is actually being put to use and that kind of stuff to make you a better planner?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So before I had my CFP designation, I was already sitting in on meetings and kind of getting that experience. And I had an idea of the certain topics, but after I jumped into the education, everything just clicked. So sitting in those client meetings, your knowledge totally, you know, gets better, and having the ability to sit in on meetings helped me so much more, and it allowed me to be a more competent and then eventually more confident planner. So definitely having that education helped me out so much, and I can totally tell the difference from before doing the CFP education to after. It has definitely made me a better planner.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up. That's an interesting point, because a lot of people that I talk to ask me, you know, even before they get experience or have a job, they ask, like, should I do CFP right now? Should I should I dive into the education? And what you're saying, and I would love your input on this, what you're saying, it sounds like, is you were already working, getting experience. And so when you layered the CFP education and that whole process, everything started to kind of click a little bit better because of what you were going through.
Exactly. So everything clicked. I had a deeper understanding of, for example, tax planning. I knew how things worked. I didn't just have an idea. I knew what, you know, the certain terms meant and how everything came together. Same with all the other topics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would your advice be, and I know this is a little subjective, but would your advice be for someone to do CFP education first, or maybe try their hand at trying to get in the industry if they know this is what they want to do, specifically financial planning, and then start that and then layer CFP?
I think it would depend on the person. In my case, it worked really well just getting the experience first, because then it would allow me to know, is this something I really want to get into? This is the day in the life of a planner that's sitting right next to me. Is this what I want to do? So after I got that experience, I was like, okay, this is definitely something I want to do. Let's move forward with the education. And that just layered up my knowledge to eventually allow me to lead meetings.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, the stuff that I think people are listening for, the actual exam taking process, you're not a career changer. You went to school and studied for this particular thing. So maybe that had some influence on maybe the trajectory of your, you know, finding a job in this field, because you were already focused on, you know, I'm going to do this. I just need to kind of see what firm I'm going to be in. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So once I finished my degree in economics, I knew I wanted to go in the finance area, but I wasn't sure specifically what area. So getting the opportunity to work here at Natural Bridges allowed me to see what Chris here, you know, our another CFP does with clients and how he works with clients. And that's when I thought, oh, this is such a great job. I love how he's working with clients and helping them out. I definitely do see this as a career opportunity. And that's when I led to getting my master's and getting that education and then going to take the exam.
Okay. So that's probably a good point to put in there, because that would be different than someone coming from, you know, let's say engineering or teaching or something like that. They may have a different path. Okay, so let's pivot this into leading up to the exam and then exam day, because I think everybody wants to know a little bit about this. So I did make some notes, and I just want to go by these because I think it's going to help people that have, you know, asked me to ask you certain things so that I can follow by it. So let's talk about your actual exam experience and preparation for. Mm-hmm. What did you use, or who did you use for education provider? Was that just your graduate studies at Golden Gate, or did you pick like a Dalton or a Zahn or somebody like that to prepare you for the exam?
So I used both. So Golden Gate allowed me to get my education. And that took me about a year because I was taking a full course load, and I really wanted to get my master's in financial planning because it was something I really wanted to do for the long term. So that's why I chose that path versus just you know, going through Bryant or another, you know, provider like that. And that took me a year to finish at Golden Gate because I was, like I said, taking a full course load. Other classmates that I had, you know, took them a little bit longer, but it varies, you know, by person. And I felt like I got great education. Some of the professors are top in the industry, and I learned so much. So I got my education through Golden Gate. And then to prepare me for the exam, I used Zahn, and I was reaching out to other planners in the Alliance of Comprehensive Network I'm associated with, and I kind of got their feedback on who did you use, what are the pros and cons, and Zahn came up, and I tried them out, and I loved them, and they are the ones who prepared me to sit for the exam.
Now, how much time after finishing up your education at Golden Gate between there and when you sat for the exam was it?
I would say about 4 months after I was done, I sat for the exam the first time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what did that 4 months look like as far as your preparation and your day-to-day
week? So one of the things that I did was I set a schedule down for myself week by week. So I knew what I was doing. I wasn't wasting time trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do today? So I already had a schedule down week by week. And for example, 1 week I just focused on just reading the material. That way, if I didn't understand a certain topic, I was able to go back and just reread it until it sunk in my head. And it allowed me to read in a calm manner, not rush or skip over stuff that the exam is going to ask. And then the following week, I would practice quizzes. And that week was just entirely on quizzes. And I would just take notes on the right and wrong answers I got. That really helped because then you understand, okay, why did I get that right? Or why did I get that wrong? So during the week, I would study about 2 to 3 hours per day after I got home from work. And then over the weekends, when I had more time, I would study about 4 hours per day. And then I would take.
So let me just pause here because this is a big point. A lot of people that I talk to that don't pass on the first try, and I asked them, I was like, well, how long did you study? How many hours did you put in a week? And whenever there's sub 20 hours, I'm like, that's probably not enough time. So it sounds like you went over that because that's just what it takes because of all the knowledge that you have to accumulate during this time. And let me just get this straight. It sounds like you basically took a week to do topic reading, going through that. And then the next week was quizzing over the previous week's topic. Was that your format?
Exactly. Okay. Because I tried different things. I was reading and then taking a quiz right after, but I was rushing my reading. It wasn't sinking in. I was just trying to get to the quiz, finish it, score a decent score, and then move on. So that's why, taking that entire week to read, even if I finished early, okay, go reread again because you're still within your timeline, just to soak it in and not rush through things. And then the following week, it was just quizzes, quizzes. I would take about maybe 50 questions per day. And I didn't try to do more while I was studying for the exam because I didn't want to burn out. Because as we get closer to the exam, a lot of people tend to increase the quiz questions that they do. And that's something I did. So I started off with about 50 per day. And just reviewing them and taking notes and taking breaks in between. And while I was doing those quizzes, I was taking them seriously because I was also focusing on what techniques can I use right now that I can also use when I'm taking the real thing. Something I learned is, okay, great, I'm pretty efficient just reading the last part of the question and knocking two of them out, you know, things like that I was already practicing with the quizzes.
No, I think you bring up a good point because I've heard some pushback on how much questions, you know, obviously there's going to be a repeat of questions in the question bank, but, you know, upwards of, I've heard, I think my friend Gary Clement talks about, you know, the 5,000 questions or more. And I mean, 50 questions a day at 4 months or 3 months, however long you're going to study is going to get you there and then some. And you said you increased yours. So I think you bring up a really excellent point that people don't get, which is, you know, you have less than like 2.5 minutes per question on the exam. So you got to be running through this stuff. And if you're not familiar, I think familiarity is the best thing. That's your biggest thing, because you're like, oh, I've seen this before. And you can kind of go through that and then spend time on some of that other stuff that's going to be harder maybe in the cases. So it sounds like you did at least 5,000 questions in your study.
Yeah. So the week I didn't entirely do 50 questions, you know, per day up until the exam. If it was a week that I was just focused on quiz questions, that's the week I was just doing quiz questions. And then the following week I was just doing reading.
Okay.
But one of the things is I tried not to burn out, because then it just, studying, it just becomes overwhelming and something that you dread, and studying for the exam is no longer fun. You just want to get it over with. And that's something I didn't want to do to myself, because I still had to learn a lot more material, not just what I was doing at that time.
And so you were still working.
Yeah, I'm still working. And I know other people have kids
and
other things going on. So making sure you take small breaks or going out for a short walk is really important, because when you come back, you're still going to have to take more quiz questions. You're still going to have to do a little bit more reading, and you're going to do that again tomorrow and the following day.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about your breaks real quick, though. Like, did you, during the studying in the 4 months, were there like, you know, maybe like a weekend off or just a kind of like a small staycation or any of that kind of stuff? Or were you just like, no, let me just go on and get through it, power through it, and then I'll give myself a big celebration afterwards?
Yeah, so I powered through it, and you really don't have time to take a small vacation, because in the back of your head, you're thinking, okay, you should be studying, or you should be reading, or taking just a few questions. So what I would do is I would just go out for a short walk or you know, do a little bit of gardening to help me not do something that related to studying for the CFP. And that freshened me up so that, you know, in an hour I would come back, or just in 30 minutes, whatever my walk was, I would be able to come back energized to go through more questions or energized to do more reading. That definitely helped me a lot not to burn out and not to dread studying for the exam.
No, I think you're bringing that out, and that's good. I think a lot of people, some of that is, you know, you get into this mode of I got to do this, and you're not enjoying the journey and the applying of the knowledge and all this other kind of stuff along the way. So you did pass on the first try, yes?
No, I did not pass on the first time.
If you're asking yourself how to decide the best path into financial services, you're not alone. Navigating the ins and outs of the financial services industry can be confusing and downright frustrating. Because just when you think you've got an interesting opportunity, you're getting baited and switched to be a glorified salesperson. Perhaps you'd like to know how to construct your best path into the financial services industry. Enter the Career Changer Blueprint Program. This is a program where I'm going to be exposing career changers just like you to the ins and outs of the financial services industry inside of the Jumpstart community. You'll get to spend time with decision makers in Ask Me Anything sessions. You'll also get to interact with financial planning clients to get additional perspective on how the financial planning process works. You're going to get access to my coaching vault and monthly training calls. All of this inside of a community of supportive, like-minded individuals. To learn more about this opportunity, please visit www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Now let's get back to the conversation.
And that goes to show you, no matter how much you study, if you put in a lot of hard work and you got a good education and a good provider that helped you try to pass the exam, one of the things I learned is that not only is the CFP exam testing you on your knowledge, it's also testing you on your test-taking skills. And that's something that I didn't know the first time around. I was thinking, okay, great, I'm just going to take this exam and go question by question. But not only do you have to be efficient, finish with about 2.5 minutes per question, but there's going to be questions that are going to be really long, and you have to prepare for those questions. How are you going to tackle those? And there's going to be questions that you just don't know. So how do you handle those as well? So doing that while you're practicing for the exam is key, so that when you sit for the actual exam, you're not thrown off by those questions and you're not getting nervous or losing your confidence. causing you to fail the exam, because test taking anxiety is a real thing with this exam. It's a big exam. It's an entire day. So just going into a facility like Prometrics is new to a lot of people. And taking a high stakes exam like that is also new. So it just totally increases your nerves and makes you think, okay, did you study enough, or did I study the right material? Did I skip over these questions? And just going in there feeling confident is key, definitely.
No, I'll share this. I failed level one of the CFA exam, and it was such an intimidating deal. This is, you know, in 2015 or 2016, but we were in this room with all level takers. So we had three on one side, level three on one side, level two in the middle, and level one on the other side. And there was literally like probably like 1500 people in this room, and like Dallas Police Department were walking up and down the aisles, because I mean, it was like a big deal. And so I totally get this exam anxiety that, you know, these environments that you're in. Like, so did you do any pre-exam prep? And I want to weave this question in before we talk about exact exam day stuff, because I think you bring up really a couple of good points, is the anxiety and how you prep for that. Do you, you know, kind of do a walkthrough or all those other kind of things? Was that something that you did, like maybe drive to the facility to kind of see where it was, or yada, yada, yada? Did you do any of that?
Yeah, I did. And I did that the second time around. I didn't do that the first time. I was thinking, okay, this is just going to be an exam I'm going to take. I've taken so many exams, you know, this is totally going to be okay. But just the going into that facility again for the second time around, it's a little bit more nerve-wracking, because you're already thinking in your head, am I not going to pass again? So the second time around, I definitely did take the 30-minute, you know, fake exam run through Prometrics, and it totally reduced my nerves on exam day. So I did that maybe 3 days or 2 days before my actual exam. So when I went to do the real thing, I was just like, okay, Prometrics, you guys are a great place. I am not nervous to come back in here again. So that helped me out a lot going through that 30-minute trial run. And then also practicing like you're going to take a real exam, like the 8-hour exam, is totally key. And I did that about 2 or 3 times before taking the real thing.
Okay.
So I came into the office, closed all the blinds, just had the laptop, my pen, my calculator, and the tax sheet and the formula sheet. And I did practice exams for the 7 or 8 hour length to practice for that big exam, because I didn't want to get nervous, and I still wanted that stamina to continue to do well during that entire time. So
now, was this on the exam, was this on take two or take one?
Take two. I definitely learned a lot from take one to implement in take two. And that's what allowed me to pass the exam the second time around. And I already practice it, you know, reading long questions and being efficient with those, and doing questions I didn't know but had an idea. I practiced doing the case study. A lot of people struggle with the case study, so practice that. If you already know, it's probably going to be difficult for you when you take the real thing. So when you take the real thing, it's not as nerve-wracking to you as, you know, when you're practicing for the exam. Let them happen during the practice instead of the real thing. And that's something I did the second time around that definitely helped me out a lot.
Yeah, the mock exam, I think some people, I don't know how many people actually take that seriously, but I used Dalton, and that was, you know, they actually had a very, you know, organized system. I'm pretty sure Zahn does too. They're like, do this through this week's, and by this time you should be, you know, at this level. You know, they do all those things to kind of help you, give you some guideposts. But the mock exam, I think, is really key, because although I didn't do an 8-hour one, I did, you know, the halftime one, or half the time, you know, like going through that, timing myself and putting myself in that environment gave me that kind of confidence. I was like, okay, I think I feel confident in this. Let me ask you this, because this was my particular case. Did you feel on the second time or the first time around that you were like overprepared, in that your rigor from your study and your exam was harder than the actual exam? Did you feel that way?
I felt that the second time around. I was like, whoa, this is totally doable. I don't know what I was thinking the first time around, feeling nervous. So being nervous is a real thing, and it's totally okay. But, you know, getting that over with when in your practice is definitely key. Yeah, but the second time around, I was like, whoa, anyone can do this. Anyone can do this if they just study and focus on the area, their weak areas before, or if people, I get a lot of people that are telling me, Annabelle, I'm running out of time or I'm getting nervous. Well, practice that during your practice quiz or during your practice exam so that you stay within time for the real thing.
No, I think that's key too, is practicing on those weak areas, you know, like the stuff that you already know. I had an investments background, so I didn't spend hardly any time on investments, but the states, the grats, the gruts, the retirement laws and all the different safe harbors, all that kind of stuff, I had to really spend some time on, because it was like, you know, a lot of that stuff is memorization, and then you got to do the application on when it applies. So let's talk about exam day. I know you've talked about some things already. And before we get into the exam stuff, let's talk about just like how you mentally prepared, like how much sleep did you get? What did you eat? Or if you did, yada, 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 that kind of thing. Because I think those are sometimes overlooked. And, you know, you've been doing all this rigor and whatever your work life and, you know, home life is. There needs to be a balance there so that you come in there mentally acute for all the rigor that's going to happen and all the stress that's going to happen on your body. So maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So I did focus on that. I didn't want to make myself miserable studying for the exam, like I said. So the day before, I just reviewed my notes. At that point, I thought, okay, I feel prepared. I feel confident. I'm scoring to the point where I feel comfortable. And I was already practicing positive affirmations. So it's kind of telling yourself, you're going to do great. You're going to pass this exam. You're capable of passing this exam. So I practice that. I practice taking deep breaths. So if you get nervous during the exam or you're getting nervous already driving to Prometrics, just taking deep breaths was really helpful. Getting a good sleep the day before is totally key. You don't want to be going, taking the exam like a zombie. You want to be sharp that day. So I try to get my 8 hours of sleep, and that was totally key, and practicing those things beforehand definitely helped me when I was taking the real thing, such as breathing and positive affirmations.
Yeah, I think those things are key. What did you do during the, because they give you a break. How did you spend your break in between the two halves? I know everybody does a little something different.
Yeah, so during my break, I took a light lunch, but at that point, my adrenaline was going everywhere. I was like, okay, Annabelle, just eat your lunch. But I just had very little of my lunch. I think that happens to a lot of candidates, because within like 30 minutes or 20, you're going to still have to go back and finish the other 3.5 hours. So I was just taking deep breaths, kind of reducing my adrenaline a little bit and staying calm and practicing those positive affirmations. Tell myself, okay, great, Annabelle, you're already done with the first half. You've done great. I'm sure you did great. Now, when you go back, you're going to push it harder and you're going to do great again. And that's what I was telling myself. And that really helped me out a lot the second time around. The first time around, I was just like, oh my God, did I do good? Did I answer that question okay?
Yeah.
And that just totally made me think of other things in my head and made me feel down. I was like, did I do everything right? Yeah. So the second time around, I was being positive and tell myself, you are doing great. You're going to do great. Go back in there and do your best. That's all you can do. Do your best. So that helped me out a lot, you know, when I was taking my break.
I think you're bringing up something that I, you know, I don't want to gloss over this, but the positive affirmations, you know, there's a book by Hal Elrod called The Miracle Morning, and he talks about savers, which I've mentioned to my audience before. You have silence, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and then scripting. This is, you know, how he starts all his mornings. I did for some time until I developed my own thing. But I think, you know, this, the what we say to ourselves, that can be a very loud voice in our heads. And depending on your background and all these different things, upbringing, that sometimes you have to change that talk track that happens. And this is no different than, I think, starting your own firm or, you know, maybe getting ready for job interviews or whatever it may be. And I'm so glad you're bringing this in, because I think this is key, as far as a tool or resource to really help people get over this hump. And it's not to say that you don't prepare, you don't do the study, and you just tell yourself all these positive messages. Because if the information is not there, the information is not there. But the combination of those two things together can be really, really powerful, which it sounds like you implemented that very well. What did you do? Because I know a lot of people want to know this. What did you do when you came to those questions you were kind of unsure about? Was it kind of like did you spend more than the 2.5 minutes, or did you just mark it and say, I'll come back to it? Like, what was your method?
Yeah. So the first time around, and I say this because those types of questions totally brought me down. I was already thinking in my head, did I study hard enough or good enough? And when I get those questions during the exam, it was just like, no, Annabelle, you didn't study hard enough because you don't know these questions. Mm. But the second time around, before I sat for the exam, I had a Zon mentor named Bart, and he would tell me, Annabelle, going into this exam is like going to war with this exam. The exam is trying to take you down question by question. But what you need to do is take that exam down question by question. Mm. So with those hard questions that you get that you have no idea about, and you're going to get very few of those where they just don't even show up in your review maybe, but just answer them the best you can. I definitely read the question and answered the question the best I could, but I answered it and I flagged it and then I moved on. I didn't let those questions faze me at all. I was like, I did my best, and that's what I was focused on doing that second time around. So if I did have time at the end, I would go back to those questions I flagged. I didn't try to flag that many, only the ones I really wanted to check. The first time around, I flagged so many that when I went back, I was overwhelmed. I was like, oh my God, I still have to review all these questions, and I have this amount of time, and my nerve just went up. So just flag the ones you really want to check, or those doozies that are just throwing you off a little bit. Just flag those, because those are the ones that you want to spend a little bit more time on. You don't want to overwhelm yourself when you just have a few minutes to review.
No, I would agree. I think I've done those Series 7, Series 66. Mm-hmm. I've had those exams, CFA. And when you flag a lot of questions, to me, that hints at a couple of things, because to your point, you're going to have very few that should stump you if you're prepared. Those are usually probably those experimental questions. They're trying to see if they want to put them on, future exams and things of that nature. But if you are really prepared, you should be able to deconstruct a question and know what they're asking in the first 30 seconds or so. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know, like you said, hopefully there's only a handful of those, maybe a couple of handfuls of those. And when you get to the end of the exam, you can kind of go back and review. So no, it sounds like you did a lot of the things. So give me your time frame. When did you pass the second time? Which testing period did you take?
So I took the March 2021 testing period.
Okay.
So before that, I studied again for another 4 months. But that time I was just reviewing stuff. I didn't want to burn myself out because I was going through it again. And I, again, didn't want to burn myself out. So I kind of read through material again. I didn't do it as in-depth as the first time. Practicing, like if I was going to take the real thing, definitely helped me the second time around.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know how to decompose a question when you're taking the real thing, that's definitely going to hinder you. So practicing that before you take the real thing definitely helped me. So again, I did about 4 months before taking the exam in March, and then I sat for the exam and passed it the second time around.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Did you already have your hours, so you were able to use the marks as soon as you passed?
Exactly. So I was able to use the marks as soon as I passed, and getting that experience beforehand definitely helped me out a lot, because as I was learning everything and sitting in on meetings, I can see how these topics related to clients, and it just totally sped up my knowledge immensely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So talk about, as we bring this in for a landing, talk about that last question you answered. Maybe it was a review one, or maybe it was just when you was going straight through, and you're like, you get to that point. I don't remember the whole sequence, but it's something like, okay, now you're ready, and you're ready to hit that button to see what what your score was, not, you know, not necessarily your score, because they give you like a provisional pass or fail, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me about that feeling. Tell me about what that was like for you.
Oh, man. I think I still had maybe 20 minutes left or so, and I was already done reviewing my questions. I was like, I don't want this exam to be over. I already felt pretty confident that I was going to pass. And you feel it because you don't get nervous. And going through the questions, you're like, whoa, this is pretty straightforward. The review programs definitely prepare you, and the education providers, if you put in the work, prepare you. So going in the second time and just getting to that last question, I was thinking, gosh, I'm just going to wait a few minutes just to soak in my environment, being at Prometrics and taking this rigorous exam. I'm just going to take this in because I hopefully when I press this button, I have a feeling that I'm going to pass. So I just took a few minutes and
savored the moment. Yeah, that's great.
Definitely savored the moment and savored it again when I got that small print that said I passed.
So. Great. That is so great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as you know, this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at a higher level. With that being said, Annabelle, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with the audience today?
Yeah, so I would say the CFP certification is available to anyone that is willing to put in the hard work. The journey is definitely not going to be easy, but is definitely well worth it. If you need help or along the journey, reach out to other CFPs that have gone through it themselves. We are more than willing to share our experience and help you along the way. So this is a helping environment. So anyone can do it. I did it and I didn't pass the first time. So if I can do it, anyone else can do it.
No, there's a lot of those stories, and I'm glad you're saying that. There's a lot of, I have, you know, colleagues in the industry that, you know, have great stature now, and they were not mm-hmm. first time passers mm-hmm. of this exam. So it is one of those things that you don't take lightly. And no matter how much knowledge, you can have a PhD in financial planning, and this is still going to be a difficult exam for you. So I'm glad mm-hmm. you're saying that. Maybe we can have you back, and we'd love to have you back for our chats with career changers to dig mm-hmm. a little bit more into your experience. Annabelle Diaz, thank you for helping us understand what it's like for a day in the life of an exam taker. Anybody interested in connecting with her, you guys can definitely check out naturalbridgesfa.com. You see that down at the bottom. And thanks again for spending this time for us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
All right. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.